I want to start today with a number. About 95% of adults, almost everyone you've ever met, has been infected with Epstein-Barr virus, EBV. Most of us caught it as children, didn't even realise, or had it as glandular fever, what they call mono in the US, in our teens. And then it goes quiet. It tucks itself away inside our immune cells, and most of us never think about it again. But over the last few years, a piece of research has fundamentally changed how scientists think about one of the most feared neurological diseases of our generation, multiple sclerosis. And the link between MS and that quiet, ordinary, almost universal virus turns out to be much stronger, much more direct, and much more important than anyone realised. So today, we're going to talk about it. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, and this is the Good Health Podcast. And today's episode is about the EBV-MS connection, the new science behind it, why it matters, what it tells us about autoimmunity more broadly, and very practically, what it means for you. I want to say at the top, this is not a fear episode. The science we're going to walk through is genuinely hopeful. It's the kind of discovery that opens doors rather than closes them. So whether you have MS yourself, whether someone you love does, whether you're an EBV survivor wondering what all of this means for you, or honestly, if you're just someone who cares about the science of how our immune system works, this episode is for you. By the end of it, you'll understand what we used to think caused MS, what changed, what the landmark 2022 study actually showed, why it matters far beyond MS, what's now being developed because of it, and most importantly, what you can practically do today to support the system that all of this hinges on. So let's jump straight into today's episode. Before we get into the science, let me give you a very quick, honest picture of what multiple sclerosis actually is. Because I think the wellness conversation about MS often skips this part, and we need it to land everything else properly. MS is an autoimmune disease, meaning the immune system, which is meant to defend you from outside threats, gets confused and starts attacking part of your own body. In MS, the part that it attacks is the protective coating around your nerves, the myelin sheath. Now think of the myelin like an insulation around an electrical wire. If you start stripping that insulation away, the signal still tries to get through, but it gets slowed down or garbled or sometimes completely blocked. And because your nerves carry every signal in your body, your vision, your balance, your sensation, your movement, your thinking, the symptoms of MS can show up almost anywhere, and they can look enormously different from one person to another. There are also different forms of MS. The most common one is called relapsing remitting MS. And this looks like episodes of new symptoms called relapses, followed by periods of recovery called remission. Many people with that form of MS live very well, capable, athletic, and demanding lives. I had an extraordinary Olympic athlete, Lena Nielsen, on this podcast a while back, who is one of the most powerful examples of that I have ever met. And then there's the more progressive form where symptoms accumulate more steady over time. MS predominantly, though, not exclusively, affects women. It's roughly 3 times more common in women than it is in men. It tends to show up between the ages of 20 and 40. And we have known for a long, long time that something about the environment plays a role, because MS rates are not even across the world. They're much higher the further you live from the equator, which has always been one of the great unanswered puzzles of neurology. Why on earth would where you happen to live change your risk of an autoimmune disease? So that's the quick picture. MS is autoimmunity with the immune system attacking the myelin around the nerves. It has been one of the most genuinely puzzling diseases in modern medicine until very recently. So let's think about what we used to think caused MS, because the story has actually changed and I want you to feel the size of that change. For decades, the answer what causes MS was essentially a list, which was more of a list of risk factors. Some genetic, so certain genes were associated with a higher risk, and some environmental. That vitamin D status, living further away from the equator, the sunlight exposure, latitude. Smoking was a known risk factor. So was obesity, especially in adolescence. And then on the list somewhere was viruses, including the one called Epstein-Barr. But here's the thing about a list. A list doesn't tell you what is actually necessary. A list doesn't tell you what's doing most of the work. A list is, in a way, a polite scientific admission that we don't really quite know what's causing it, but we know that all of these things are there somewhere. They're part of the engine. And for a very long time, that's where the MS science sat. We had this list of risks, no clear lead suspect, and a very frustrated set of researchers who couldn't really fully explain why this disease was happening to this body. And the reason that Epstein-Barr virus was so suspected, but so hard to pin down, came back to that 95% figure. If almost everyone has had EBV, but only a small fraction of people go on to develop MS, what could that possibly tell you? The signal looked too small to matter because the background level was so high. Looking for EBV's role in MS was a bit like trying to figure out whether breathing air is what was making people sick. Of course, people who get sick are breathing air, but so is everybody else. What was needed was something completely different, something genuinely big. A study so large and so well designed that it could find a clean, unmistakable signal in all of that noise. And that's what we got in 2022. In January of 2022, a team of researchers, led by Bjornovic at Harvard, published a study in the journal Science. And it has, I think it's fair to say, probably changed the field permanently in how we look at MS. What they did was beautiful, and it is worth understanding because the design is what makes the answer so strong. The US military for years had been routinely storing blood samples from active service members, millions of them. So this team went into those samples, they followed more than 10 million young adults over 20 years, and they did something that almost no other study has ever been able to do. They could check retrospectively in those stored samples who had EBV, when they got it, and which of them went on to develop MS. And what they found was extraordinary. They identified 955 people in that cohort who developed MS during the study period. And of those, over 99% had been infected with EBV before their MS began. So that alone is striking. But then it gets even more interesting. When they compared the people who caught EBV during the study to the people who didn't, the people who caught EBV had a 32-fold increased risk of going on to develop MS. So that's 32 times. That's not a small association. That's one of the largest risk associations in the entire field of chronic disease research. And then they did one more thing, almost as a quality check. They looked at other viruses, so cytomegalovirus, which is called CMV, which is similar to EBV in many ways, but the CMV did not predict MS at all, which tells us that the EBV signal isn't just an any virus increases your risk signal. It was something specific, something about EBV in particular. Now, and this is genuinely important, so please stay with me here. I need to be very careful with my language here because what this study showed is what scientists call a near necessary cause. So EBV appears to be something that in almost every case has to happen first for MS to happen, but that's not sufficient. Almost everyone has had EBV, but not many people get MS. So EBV is, the best evidence we have suggests, required, but is not enough on its own. So something else, going back to that list, your genetics, your vitamin D status, possibly other factors that we don't fully understand yet, has to combine with that EBV exposure to set the disease in motion. So if you've had glandular fever, please hear me, this does not mean that you're going on to develop MS. The vast majority of people who have EBV are entirely fine. What this study tells us, though, is not that EBV is dangerous to everybody. It tells us that EBV is the door that MS needs to walk through. And that single change in understanding, that single shift from one of many risks to a near necessary cause, changes absolutely everything about what we can do. And I want to widen the lens for a moment, because the EBV story doesn't just stop at MS. EBV is now being investigated in a whole series of other autoimmune conditions. There's growing research linking EBV reactivation to things like systemic lupus, to rheumatoid arthritis, to Sjogren's, and yes, to Hashimoto's, the autoimmune thyroid condition that we talk about so often on this podcast. The patterns are not identical to MS. The relationships are a bit more complicated, less established at the moment, and the science is still being built. But the idea that this one very common, very ordinary virus might be quietly playing a role across a whole range of autoimmune conditions is one of the most important shifts happening in immunology right now. And there is a parallel here that I think a lot of you will already recognize, and that is long COVID. Because part of what long COVID has taught us, painfully, is that a virus can leave behind something more than an acute illness, a lingering immune disturbance that ripples on for months, sometimes years. EBV has been doing exactly this kind of thing quietly in the background for a very long time, often ending up being called something like chronic fatigue. We just didn't have the tools to see it as clearly as we do now. So when I talk on this podcast about viral reactivation, when I talk about supporting the immune system, not just to fight off colds, but to keep latent infections quiet, this is what I'm pointing at. This is not fringe. This is increasingly mainstream science. The understanding that the viruses we have already met can quietly shape our chronic disease risk for decades is one of the most important medical ideas of our time. It's changing how we think about who gets sick and why, and therefore what we can actually do about it. Now, the next natural question is, okay, if EBV is this important, are we doing anything about it? And the answer is yes. And this is happening right now. So in late 2025, a phase 2 clinical trial began testing on experimental mRNA vaccine for EBV, built on the same technology as the COVID vaccines, specifically in people who already have early stage MS. The hope is that by training the immune system to respond more effectively to EBV, you can quiet the viral activity that may be driving the ongoing immune attack on the myelin. So that trial is enrolling around 108 people across the US, UK, Australia, and it's expected to run for around 4 years. So we're in the really, really early days of this. But this may be something that turns out to be one of the most important shifts in MS treatment in our lifetimes. There are also preventative EBV vaccines being developed. The idea being that if you can stop the virus establishing itself in the first place, you might one day be able to dramatically reduce the lifetime risk of MS and possibly of other EBV-linked conditions too. And there are therapies in development that target EBV directly inside the body. For example, T-cell therapies that train your own immune cells to recognize and clear EBV-infected cells. These are all very, very early and they are currently very experimental and they're not a standard care yet. And I'm absolutely not telling you to chase any of them at this stage. But what I want you to know is that work is being done. These things exist. Because the moment science identifies a real cause, that's when we can start designing real solutions. And we are watching that happen in real time with EBV. And this may be years in the future yet, but it is happening. Now, I want to be really honest with you because this is a measured podcast. And I like to make sure that you've got all the up-to-date information. None of this is going to translate into changed care for anyone with MS tomorrow. Clinical trials are going to take years over this. Translation into mainstream medicine is going to take longer than that. But the direction of travel has completely changed. We've moved on from we don't really know what causes MS to we have a target and we're actively trying to hit it. So let's bring all of this all the way down to you. What does any of it actually mean for you today? If you've had EBV, remember almost everyone has, whether you know it or not, there is genuinely no need to panic. The vast majority of people who have had EBV will never develop MS or any other EBV-linked autoimmune disease. Your absolute risk remains very low. So this is not a if you've had glandular fever, go get tested for MS. That's not the takeaway from this. But what this whole picture does tell us is something that actually is very empowering. Because while we cannot unmeet a virus that we have already encountered, we can do an enormous amount to keep that virus quiet and to support the immune system. To make sure it is well regulated rather than overactive, to keep that viral load down, and to do things that quiet that viral reactivation and keep immunity balanced. These things are not exotic. These are things that in functional medicine we're doing all the time. And they're exactly the things that I've talked about week in, week out on this podcast. So for example, sleep. Genuine, regular, restorative sleep is one of the most powerful immune regulators we have. It's your stress load. Chronic stress is a known driver of viral reactivation. And the relationship between cortisol and dormant viruses like EBV is well documented. It's your gut where 70% of your immune system lives and where so much of your immune education quietly happens. It's your nutrient status, particularly things like vitamin D, which has its own story in the MS literature. But also more broadly, the nutritional foundations your immune system needs to function. It's how you are carrying your environmental load, which is exactly what we talked about a few episodes back. And it's your mental and emotional state because chronic suppressed stress is one of the most reliable ways to push an immune system out of balance. If you have MS yourself or you love someone who does, what I most want you to take away from today's episode is permission to feel hopeful. We're not in 2010 with this disease anymore. The science has fundamentally shifted. Treatments are evolving and the things you do in your life, your sleep, your stress, your gut, your environment, they're absolutely part of the picture. They are not all that you can do, but there are now real medical interventions and there are more coming. And the more recent the research becomes, the clearer that this is becoming. And if you are someone listening with raised thyroid antibodies or rheumatoid arthritis or another autoimmune condition where viral reactivation might be part of your story, this episode is also for you. Because the underlying principle is the same. The work of supporting a well-regulated immune system, the work of keeping latent viruses quiet, the work of removing what is adding to the load and resourcing what supports the response, that work is the same. And that is what we do day in, day out in functional medicine. And it matters. It really, truly matters. This is exactly the lens that the Mitoimmune Health Assessment was built around. It looks at the immune side of your health as part of one whole interconnected system. Your stress, your sleep, your gut, your hormones, the load you're carrying, the resources you have, and so much more. So if today's episode has prompted you to think about your own immune resilience differently, that's your next step. Take the free Mitoimmune Health Assessment. It's linked in the show notes below this episode. And if you want a proper foundation laid out, how the immune pillar and the other pillars actually work and how to support them and how they work together, that is exactly what I walk through in detail in my book, Optimal You. So don't panic. Don't go and Google your every symptom. Just go and look gently instead at the foundations, your sleep, your stress, your gut, the basic unglamorous resilience of your immune system. Because for the very first time in the history of MS, we do know what we're working with. And the things you do every single day are a huge part of that answer. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you think it would be beneficial for somebody that you know, please do share it. Please don't forget to rate the podcast on your favorite app. Look after yourself, and I'll see you next week on the Good Health Podcast. You've been listening to the Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner, autoimmune and thyroid specialist, and author of Optimal You. You can find me at goodhealth.uk, that's goodehealth.uk, on Instagram at goodhealthclinic, goodehealthclinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. All the resources are linked in the show notes below. I'll see you next week.